television screen has become the retina of the mind's eye.
Yes.
That's why I refuse to appear on television, except on television. Of course, Oblivion is not the name I was born with. That's my television name. Soon, all of us will have special names. Names designed to cause the cathode ray tube to resonate.
Death to Videodrome, Long Live the New Flesh, on episode 28 of the Cut Print Film Podcast. Here are your hosts, Jeff, Dave, and Chris.
Hey guys, it's us, you know, Cut Print Film, the podcast.
Well, I'm hooked. Tell me more.
I'm Dave Costell, one of the three hosts.
I'm Chris Evangelista, one of the other three hosts.
I'm Jeff Rollins, the third host.
The third?
Yes.
Or just the...
I'm Jeff Rollins the first, actually.
Jeff Rollins.
My daughter is Jeff Rollins the second.
Giofina.
Yeah.
All right, so this week, nothing happened in movie world.
Yeah,
so
we're in September, which is bad month for movies.
I'm going to say that this director series is a direct symptom of the current movie climate we're in.
Oh, I like that segue.
Yeah, it definitely is.
Yeah, because right now there's just nothing coming out. I guess the majority of movies, they're just tailored for younger audience. Even if the movie is quote-unquote an adult movie, it's still geared to a younger audience, and kids go back to school in September and stuff like that, so no one's going to the movies, I guess.
Yeah, everybody's busy going to PTA meetings.
Yeah, and going to Target buying pencils in the school supply area.
Gotta go to the Franklin Mills Mall to get some new school clothes. I need new white jeans, Mom.
Mom, could you buy me those folders with the iguana spiking the volleyball on them? It'll make me the coolest kid in school.
The college kids are they're out on the quad watching a film. You know, they're watching.
They're working on their quads.
Texas Chainsaw 3D.
Every day's leg day.
When you're in college, every day's leg day.
All right. Well, Jeff saw Wetlands this week.
Yeah. Of the few movies that came out this week, this and what was that other one? God Help the Girl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are the two that I was interested in. Everything else, I just could not
care
less
about. Did anything actually come out in theaters, though? Because those are both VOD movies.
No, that's pretty much no. No is the answer.
The Identical came
out. Oh, yeah, the one about Elvis's twin who survives. And it's
this is a wasteland of a week for movies.
I almost wish we had seen that movie, because that sounds insane, because it's about Elvis's twin brother who is alive.
Who became a different Elvis?
Yeah, became a different Elvis.
His name was Pelvis.
It's more fitting, actually.
Yes, it is.
Shakespeare, baby.
So, yeah, I saw Wetlands.
How was it? What was it about?
It was great.
It's German, right?
Yeah, it's a German language film. It came out earlier this year, actually, internationally, I should say.
It's a pretty vulgar movie, right?
Very vulgar.
From what I've seen and
they
heard.
They say damn a lot.
Yes, and gee whiz.
Yeah. Yeah, what the heck they say?
It's about this girl, her name's Helen, and she was raised by her mother to keep her genitals spotless because she's more susceptible to diseases than boys are because, you know, it's an opening in your body.
Right.
So the movie opens up with her cleaning a bathroom spotlessly clean when she's a little girl, and then it immediately transitions to her as an adult finding the filthiest toilet she can find, pulling her pants down, and gyrating her naked body around the rim of this disgusting toilet. And from there, we're off to the races.
So it's like a comedy on how you can fuck up your kids by being...
Yeah, I mean, the parents split up eventually, and the whole film is about her trying to get them back together. She cuts her anus shaving. And ends up in the hospital.
Oh, so this is like the Parent Trap.
Exactly like the Parent Trap. It's like I Spit on Your Grave, if I'm not mistaken. She cuts herself shaving and ends up in the hospital. And
she needs a Venus.
What's that?
She needs a Venus
razor.
Yeah,
she does. She needs that Jewel Safety song.
Blade. What?
But, yeah, remember Jewel covered the I'm Your Venus, I'm Your Fire for the commercial? Anyway, back to the movie.
That's enough Jewel references for one night.
I've got three more planned.
Tune in next week for another Jewel reference. She lived in her van.
She ends up in the hospital and then decides that this is the perfect way to get her parents back together by her sickbed. And that's essentially the core plot of the movie. It's really, really funny.
Is it reminiscent of Nymphomaniac?
In a way, yeah. I liked it a whole lot more because the supporting cast is not as deplorable as Nymphomaniac's supporting cast.
And do they act like real people instead of...
That's the odd thing. Like, it's...
Well, they act like Germans. And how real can you be if you're German?
Exactly.
Ugh. Don't get me started.
It's definitely set in its own universe, and everybody kind of...
It's a wet universe, right?
Yeah, it's the wetlands. Everybody reacts to her insane behavior as though, oh, well, it's just the way she is, right. When in real life you'd be like, I think we need to put you away.
Do Bruce Springsteen's Badlands ever come up?
No, not once. You'd be surprised in this German film.
They both have lands in the title.
All right, well,
yeah, no.
Does Land of Lakes Butter come up any time in the film?
I gave this an 8 out of 10 on cutprintfilm.com, and I think it's definitely worth checking out if you're not squeamish.
Yeah.
And if this movie does upset your stomach, I don't know what to tell you,
because
it's about more than that. It's a very, very good
movie. So if you checked out Nymphomaniac and wanted more funny... And not as much.
This is a lighthearted movie.
Okay.
It's gross, but it's lighthearted.
If you wanted less Shia LaBeouf, see Wetlands.
It's like the best part.
And we
of
all it. Want less of him, despite what Dave says.
All right. Well, we're gonna segue somehow into our director series.
Let me get on this segue I stole from the mall and ride it in here.
I was wondering why you came in your work uniform.
That's not a real badge.
You're leading tour guides in Philly. Director series. That's it. I think that's enough. They've heard enough. And I'll have everybody know that me talking right there, that's part of the recording.
Yeah, that's not live.
That is not live.
Even though it fools me every time and I'm right here.
Are you still saying action?
Yeah, I'll never stop saying action.
Well, we've moved to a cave for this episode.
So the director series... Someone tell the folks at home what the director series is here on the Cut Print Film Podcast.
The director series is when we explore three films from a specific director's filmography in chronological order.
Across three separate episodes.
Yes.
Yeah, we don't cram it into one episode. That would be silly.
Yeah,
that'd be like our Anderson episode.
That would be like early episodes of Cut Print Film before we learned our lesson.
Yes, before we decided, hey, maybe we should make this like an actual show and not just three guys listing movie titles.
Yeah. Instead of BuzzFeed the show, we're going to actually have content.
So yeah, our first director series was Brian De Palma.
And thankfully that's over.
Well, all right, that's a bit harsh. They weren't all bad.
Two out of three weren't bad, just like Meatloaf says.
Yeah, so for Brian De Palma, we did Sisters, we did Blowout, and we did Casualties of War.
We did blowouts on each other's hair, too.
Yeah, we did. Then we were lifting weights really in the front yard.
Yeah, Casualties of War put us in a sour De Palma mood, though. So
yeah, which is something that might happen with the director series, because for some reason, as directors get older, they sort of just lose that magic. I don't know why.
And that's going to be part of the fun.
Yeah, quote-unquote fun.
Well, yeah, so I didn't have much fun last week. I almost hung myself.
So this week we've moved on to David Cronenberg.
Yes, and you may know David Cronenberg how?
Well... Specializing in both the cerebral and the visceral, David Cronenberg is a Canadian filmmaker who is best known for his horrific explorations of the deep inner psyche colliding with the physical reality of the human body. Cronenberg had minimal success with his early films like Shivers, Rabid, and The Brood, but it was with 1981's Scanners that the filmmaker was vaulted into cult icon status.
He pretty much invented body horror.
Right, that's right? Like his genre. Yeah. And yeah. With Scanners, basically, the opening scene is a man's head graphically exploding. And from there, people were like, I want to watch more.
I'm in.
Right. Yep. So Cronenberg grew up in a bog. Cronenberg.
With the Scottish kings of old.
Cronenberg followed up Scanners with Videodrome.
The movie we're about to talk about.
Right. And his most... mainstream successful film was 1986, The Fly, featuring Jeff Goldblum at his Jeff Goldblumist.
That's right. He's in full bloom.
Yeah.
He's in full Goldblum.
And other films of Cronenberg's include The Dead Zone, Naked Lunch, Crash, Dead Ringers, History of Violence, Eastern Promises, and his most recent film is Maps to the Stars, which has yet to have a U.S. release.
Crash. That's the one where Sandra Bullock teaches us how to not
no.
be racist. Right?
No,
oh,
this is the one where people get aroused from car crashes.
Ah, yeah.
It's similar to racism.
I read the book and absolutely loathed it.
Yeah, the book is hard to get into, but the movie Crash is an interesting movie because it's an uncomfortable movie. Like, it feels like you're watching something you should not be watching.
From James Spader.
Yeah.
I've never seen Crash.
It's good.
But I've heard of it and the concept, and after watching Videodrome, like, I can see Crash, the movie, in my head.
Crash is
it makes more sense now, you know what I mean?
It's Crash is much colder than Videodrome. That's like a movie run through like antiseptic and put on the screen. But enough about Crash.
That's right. We'll get to that some other time because it's not part of this director's series at all.
No, I wish it had been.
So yeah, Videodrome came out in 1983, and it stars James Wood, Sonia Smits, Debbie Harry, who is Blondie.
Call me!
That's right, Dave. Thank you. Leslie Carlson.
Well, call me Leslie!
Leslie! Peter Dvorsky and Jack Creeley.
So, you know, two people you heard of.
That's right.
A bunch of other people you never heard of. They're all, they're probably all Canadian because David Cronenberg.
And one of them died recently. Yeah. Leslie Carlson.
James Woods.
James Woods. Breaking news. James Woods has died. Oh, wait.
Just his career. So, yeah. Videodrome is about... It's the delightful story of...
yeah, it's a madcamp romp, if you will.
Before you try to explain Videodrome, this is from something I read earlier today about Videodrome.
Sure.
Even the simplest description of Videodrome would read like a foreign language.
That's why we're going to do a 6-paragraph description. Yeah. So put your seatbelts on, everybody.
Hunker down.
Max Wren, played by James Woods, runs a TV station in Toronto that specializes in sensationalistic programming. Displeased with his station's current lineup, Max is looking for something that will break through to a new audience. Harlan, played by Peter Dvorsky, operates the network's pirate satellite dish that can intercept international broadcasts and shows him a show called Videodrome, a plotless show apparently broadcast out of Malaysia, which depicts brutal torture and murder of anonymous victims in a reddish-orange chamber. And these are perceived as staged, right, initially.
Can I ask a question?
No, I won't have
Can
it.
I say I want that red chamber in my basement? I just love the way that looks, man.
Does this... So we're under the assumption this takes place in a futuristic world?
Yeah, it's basically... I have in my notes 70s sleaze in the future.
Yeah.
This looks like it's right out of 1978.
It's one of those films that's tough, like, because we've surpassed it technology-wise, right. So all, like, you could tell that they tried to do this subtle future the same way, like, I would imagine Children of Men is going to be tough for our kids to like, understand that takes place in the future.
There's so many CRT monitors and stuff like that.
And, well, everything is, like, I don't even know if that CRT is. Oh, cathode ray tube, never mind. All right, I never realized that's what that stood for.
Yeah, you do.
Believing this to be the future of television, seemingly staged snuff TV, Max orders Harlan to begin recording the program. Max appears on a talk show where he meets TV reporter Nikki Brand, played by Blondie.
Call me!
Hubba hubba.
Thank you.
I'm gonna do that every time.
A sadomasochistic psychiatrist and radio host.
My kind of girl.
Yes. And Irish professor Brian Oblivion.
Oh, God. I love those characters.
Yeah, he's wonderful, played by Jack Creeley. Brian Oblivion delivers a speech prophesizing a future in which television replaces real life. And while he's doing this, Max asks Nikki out on a date on live television.
That whole scene is fantastic.
And she says yes. So they go back to his place, and he shows her Videodrome, and she becomes sexually aroused. Like, that's how I got my wife. What?
She goes, got any porno?
Yes.
She's like looking through his tits.
Gets me in the mood.
So Harlan tells Max that Videodrome is actually being broadcast out of Pittsburgh, PA.
Max, where all shit comes from.
that's the Rust Belt, Dave.
Yeah.
Max tells Nikki, who goes to Pittsburgh to try out an audition for the program, When Nikki doesn't return, Max contacts Masha, or Masha? I don't remember the name being ever said.
He keeps saying it differently.
Yeah. A softcore feminist Misha. Pornographer. Misha, sure.
Whatever.
A softcore feminist pornographer with ties to the porn community. Ooh. And asks her to help him find out the truth about Videodrome. Through Masha, Max learns that not only is the footage Misha. In Videodrome real, but it's the public face of a political movement.
Bet you didn't see that coming.
No, I actually didn't.
I don't think anyone saw anything in this movie coming.
I'm really saying no one saw that coming.
Yeah, literally no one.
Because it doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. It comes out of the blue.
It's great.
Masha further informs him that Brian Oblivion knows about Videodrome. Max tracks down Oblivion's office to a mission where homeless people are encouraged to engage in marathon sessions of television viewing. He discovers the mission is run by Oblivion's daughter, Bianca, played by Sonia Smits, with the goal of helping to bring about her father's vision of a world in which TV replaces every aspect of everyday life. Shortly thereafter, Max begins experiencing hallucinations in which his torso transforms into a gaping hole
right.
that functions as a VCR, which is fantastic.
Right. He basically gets a vaginal slit in his stomach.
These are side effects from having viewed the Videodrome programming, which carries a malicious broadcast signal that causes the viewer to develop brain tumors. It is revealed that Oblivion has actually died because of these tumors.
I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We don't really know. Max is contacted by Videodrome's producer, the Spectacular Optical Corporation.
Right.
An eyeglasses company that acts as a front for a NATO weapons manufacturer.
I love that.
What?
And it's run by?
It's run by Barry Convex, played by the late Leslie Carlson, who I think is absolutely wonderful in this movie.
Such good names. Barry Convex.
Max Wren, yeah. Barry Convex. Brian Oblivion. Yeah. He has been secretly working with Harlan to get Max exposed to Videodrome and have him broadcast it to the public.
Harlan, how could you?
I know. So that they can weed out the perverse in our society. Bianca successfully reprograms Max to turn against Videodrome.
Right.
And he goes on a rampage, killing Barry Convex.
With a cancer gun that grows out of his hand.
He shoots cancer at Barry, and eventually...
Or Rice Krispies.
Yeah, whatever. It could be Rice Krispies. There's a lot of snapping and crackling. He eventually is persuaded to leave the old flesh behind.
Right.
And kills himself with his own tumor.
Long live the new flesh.
And a bunch of guts explode out of a TV.
And
spoilers.
Yes, he says, long live the new flesh, and shoots himself right in the head.
And we all take a shower.
And then we watch the credits roll. Yeah. And that's Videodrome, everybody.
Good night. Oh, wait.
So
while that sounded like a clusterfuck, and it does, like, I hate that whenever I'm... Like, a lot of these 70s, 80s... science fiction movies pulled stuff from Philip K. Dick.
Right.
I don't know if you guys have ever read a Philip K. Dick book, mm-hmm. but they all read like this movie. Like, this is the
first... There's always a secret government operation.
There's always everything possible going on at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's something that no movie does the way this one does.
Right.
Like, it works.
It's because...
I'd like to touch on that theme a little later,
okay.
But go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, just
around
like...
midnight?
Yeah.
I was going to say a lot of filmmakers are scared to put that much shit in their movie because filmmakers just assume we're all idiots. They'll just be like, no one's going to get all this stuff, so let's not put it in a movie.
Or let's have a character explain it in a monologue.
Yeah.
Which this movie does not do.
Well, the thing is, I don't even think Cronenberg knows what a lot of it means. He's just like, you know,
well, that's
what happened.
With this film, the script and screenplay were written as they were filming it.
Right.
Yeah.
The screenplay wasn't even finished.
Well, there was an original draft, which was about 70 pages long. And it was much crazier.
Oh,
and that was the draft that basically everyone signed on for. Like James Woods read that draft, and Debbie Harry read that draft, and they were like, "We'll make this crazy movie."
Well, I know like a lot of people do this. Their first draft they write intentionally crazy,
right?
Because no matter what, you're going to be asked to tone your movie down.
Right.
But when Cronenberg had a unique experience with this, he wrote the crazy first draft, and everyone loved it. And he was like, no, we got to tone this down.
I was reading about the original draft, and there's a scene in the original draft where Nikki and Max are making out, and their faces melt together. Then the face melts off, crawls up someone's leg and melts the person it crawls onto.
Wow.
But which, like, I wish that were in the movie.
In 1983, that, I mean, that's certainly possible now, yeah. But 1983, Rick Baker, the special effects guy with the gorgeous silver ponytail.
I love him, man.
He could not make that come to life.
This is 83?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the year I was born, everyone.
Me too.
Were you born out of Videodrome?
Yeah, I was.
James Woods birthed me.
I exploded from a TV. Yeah, out of his vaginal slit stomach, I just came crawling out.
All right, there's some very important things to say about Videodrome. And I think one of the most important is how influential this movie has been.
And prescient.
Yeah, it's a prophetic film, basically.
Big time.
But it's the two things in different directions. It's influenced a ton of movies, and it's prophesized a ton of actual real world things.
Yeah. This is as I was watching it, my jaw was
it's insanity.
Dropping constantly, because even the clip we use for the intro about how everyone will have an alias.
Right.
He calls them television names, which is screen names. Like yeah, he anticipates a screen name.
That's internet commenter names.
Right.
That's your Discus name.
This is before, like, that's what is. Like, you can tell Cronenberg knew what was going to happen next. He just couldn't understand it.
Right.
Because all these TV, it's the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but it just doesn't, that's why, like, the movie doesn't make sense, because everything's not connected through the internet. It's
right.
connected through this,
through
like.
Rays.
Yeah.
Well, I read that this was inspired, this movie, the whole idea of Videodrome, the channel that could send signals to you, was inspired by warnings as a kid not to sit too close to the TV, because people didn't know what kind of radiation came out of televisions at the time. And I thought that was very interesting.
That's cool.
That's the genesis, essentially, of this whole
thing. Chris said earlier, one of the things that inspired him to like the Videodrome aspect of it, when he was a kid, when Cronenberg was a kid, he would tune into US frequencies, because he lived in Canada.
Yeah.
And he would get like pirated frequencies, and he said he was always afraid that he would see something that wasn't meant for like the public to see, like something he wasn't
right.
supposed to
right.
be watching.
Right.
Like that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Crash is like
right.
So he may have used that element in both films.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, it was.
Another thing I thought was interesting: James Woods' character's name Max Wren.
Right.
And this is completely unconfirmed. I found this out by accident today, completely randomly, listening to another podcast. The character named Max Wren might be based on a television's rating system called RenTrak, which was only used originally to track the sales of video cassettes.
Oh.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And it, like I said, it's completely unconfirmed.
Yeah.
I couldn't find
a conflicting
connection
report.
Anywhere. That was odd.
I read he was named after the Ren Fair. Where
no, I actually Max Ren.
It was Max. His original name was Max Ren Fair.
Do you have any mead?
The thing I read said that Max Ren is named after the German motorcycle manufacturer Ren Max.
Okay. It should be
Cronenberg's
that
obsessed.
Cronenberg
with.
Loves motorcycles. Yeah. He's big on.
That's probably
motorcycles.
It. I just found that to be a
and
crazy
that,
coincidence.
What's her name?
Debbie Harry.
Yeah. What's her name in the movie?
Nikki Brandt.
Yeah, Nikki Brand, she nicks herself on the shoulder and brands her tit with the cigar.
Interesting.
So Cronenberg's not good with names.
Nice use of tit there, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what are you going to say?
Breast?
Bosom?
Her supple bosom.
Her bazooms.
Wait, we got to get back to the prophecy of this film before we can actually touch into it. Was there, like, the addiction to media?
Yes.
Is something
yeah,
that
just, the, just the overall use of just mixed media. Just the way this movie just pretty much.
Yeah. It's insane. Like, it feels like at this point, this is a reaction to, like, a frustration with television that people weren't getting enough out of it. Like, mm-hmm. Like they could feel the internet behind the television, like the scene where he's crawling into the TV. Like
yeah.
That's how I read it now, because from like the 50s up until what was it when Al Gore invented the internet, whatever year that was, like the TV essentially stays exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing changes. So at a certain point, people are just like,
nothing changes until about 1995.
Yeah. When you get, yeah.
When Friends premiere. No.
When Must See TV really hit its stride with the Friends and Seinfeld lineup.
But I don't know. There's so many awesome lines in this movie that are just like, they're just before their time. You know
that's
what I mean?
The other that feeds back into that theme I wanted to touch back on. There is some dialogue in this film that simply should not work, and yet it does.
Right. Like when the guy's at the table, he's like, "It's not tacky enough for me."
It's like, or it's when Bianca Oblivion says to Max Wren, "I am my father's scream."
Yeah, which
that that should be
that's a dumb line.
Yeah, that should be something you say. Oh, bullshit.
Yeah,
but I was totally buying this.
No, yeah,
yeah. Even like the death to Videodrome, it shouldn't work, but it
long
comes
live the
off
new
as
flesh.
Cool.
That should not like that. That sounds like cheesy sci-fi dialogue, but it's fantastic.
Yeah. It works so well
on paper. It had to not read well, which right. is why I don't understand why all these people signed on.
I don't either, but. That's the other thing. This cast is excellent.
Wait,
including Debbie Harry. Yes.
There was a point in the movie, the scene where James Woods is whipping the television.
Uh-huh.
Right.
I just imagined the day on set of him whipping television,
a TV.
And how like in his head he wasn't going, "What the fuck am I doing?"
Yeah. I actually had that like same exact thought. I was just like, "Man, that must have been a weird day of filming."
Just like
you're gonna whip a TV because I'm sure they did like a million takes.
Where you're gonna start second guessing, like, "Is this a good idea?" I'm fucking whipping a TV in a red room right now.
Chris, you have this on Criterion.
Yes.
Did you watch the behind the scenes featurette?
I did. I didn't watch it for this viewing, but I watched it a while ago. But I also listened to the commentary with Cronenberg.
Oh, excellent!
And it's very good. Cronenberg, when he does commentaries, is very informative, and he has the most soothing voice.
Yes, he is. He's a laid-back guy.
He's got a nice, relaxed voice.
I am David Cronenberg.
Yeah, that's exactly how he sounds. I thought he was in the room right now.
Yeah, I didn't watch that because I don't have this, but I did find that behind-the-scenes featurette on YouTube. It's called Forging the New Flesh.
Right, right.
And James Woods comes off as so... invested in this movie. That
you could tell that he was.
He's so invested and so into it and so behind David Cronenberg that I feel like even as he's whipping a dead television...
He's like, fuck yeah, let's
he's like,
this.
Yeah, I'm picturing that he is so enthusiastic about it. Because that's how he comes off in this behind-the-scenes thing.
Yeah, I read something about how... There's a lot of interviews with him for this film, and he seems to have been really into the role.
And you can tell because he is... He's chewing the scenery.
He's
up.
Great. I mean, he brings like this perfect level because like this character is inherently like a sleazy character, and he's
really, a pornographer. He's seeking pornography.
And he plays it in such a way that like even though we accept that he's sleazy, we also like care about what he's doing. It's like in another actor's hands, it would have been like, I don't give a shit what happens to this guy because he's an asshole. But he has this like weird like humanity to him that makes the character endearing. And he also has this like nice, just his visual. Like, he's very like feral looking James Woods. He looks like a sewer rat, basically.
Yeah,
wearing a trench coat.
He's skinny and he's kind of like got like these, I don't know, these teeth that are like, he's all teeth.
Yeah, he's just he's a strange looking guy, but it's just it works so well for this role.
He does a good job in this role too, because like when he makes the switch over to the anti-Videodrome thing, like you can see that he's acting different.
Yeah,
like
that one part where he comes to kill Bianca and he just keeps saying like, "I'm Max Wren, I run Civi." Like that's such a like
it had me
great creepy scene. Just
yeah,
it
had me going
it.
Back and forth. Is he telling the truth or is he going to assassinate?
And
her?
He's like, "I don't kill people," even though he's just killed two people brutally by shooting them in the face.
Yeah, he goes back to his office and
he kills his partners. Right. Because Barry Convex's voice keeps telling him to.
Yeah, that Barry Convex character, I loved.
I loved
this guy.
Oh, yeah.
He's the main antagonist.
And eventually he melts.
He's just like the president of bad.
Yeah.
he's Mr.
He just
Evil,
randomly
basically.
Shows up.
He's CEO of evil, basically.
And I like that the front of this corporation is an eyeglass store.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Nope.
But, I mean, it has, like, symbolic...
How about that? How about that eyeglass show at the end where everyone's dancing and
oh
wearing?
Oh my
leotard?
Goodness!
That's probably the only thing in a movie filled with weird stuff. That was the only thing that was like, that's a weird thing. Bunch of people dancing about eyeglasses.
Yeah, the film ends at this giant convention where he's unveiling the latest in eyewear.
The spring line, I think he says.
But even that is prophetic. Like it's akin to
it's
the
like
latest
the
iPhone.
Yeah,
right. Like,
but hey, coming out the announcement's next week.
You know what I mean? It was a fucking keynote for eyeglasses. Yeah. Like, your way to see the future.
Yeah.
I like that scene where they're in the store and James Woods puts on those ridiculous glasses and he's like,
hey, that's he looks like they're upside down.
They're ladies' glasses.
Yeah. That's a prototype. You might want to take those off.
Yeah. But so, he calls it a machine too, which is just weird because he's like, oh, that machinery's not right for your head.
Yeah, all of the verbiage they use is like slightly off,
but like spot on. Right. Trying to do
like you can tell that it's off, but for the film, it's dead on.
Yeah,
and I couldn't tell if it was like just weirdness or a result of this future we're supposed to be in, where people are just totally desensitized.
I think it's the future.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of that where people are desensitized and they need more stimulation. They need the raunch to be raised a level higher.
Which is also prophetic in a way. Definitely. Just the concept of, because there's a part at the end where Max finds out that, what the fuck's his name? Harlan is working with Videodrome.
Yeah.
And Barry Convex shows up and he's like, why would anyone watch a trash show like Videodrome? And that's like, that's exactly where we are now as a society, pretty much. It's like,
we'll watch anything.
Where the New York Post is putting fucking images of people getting their heads cut off on the front page.
We live in an age where reporters are being brutally murdered and filmed.
And then
seeking it out and watching it.
Yeah, the New York Post puts it on the front page. That's the society we live in now. And like this film pretty much was like, yep, that's where you're going.
I was thinking that the whole time I was watching this film.
But it's also, we live in an age where we're getting all these signals of everything. You know what I mean? You're just kind of intercepting them. Yeah. It's what the movie is saying is going to happen, which is crazy.
Yeah, it's all these different entities fighting for your attention, your eyeballs. And we're fighting for your earballs. So please listen to Cut Print Film.
Give me that earball.
I wanted to talk about the effects.
Yes.
Because that's a major, major part of this movie.
It's a very effects heavy film, and they're all practical effects because that's what you had to do back then.
I absolutely love that.
Absolutely,
I love it.
You cannot beat a good practical effect. Like, there's been talk for years of remaking this film, which just fills me with dread.
It would be absolutely pointless because part of the charm of this film is the practical effects.
Right. I mean, first of all, like
the ingenuity that went into it.
And like, first of all, video would not be relevant for remaking this.
It'd be Divx drone. Vimeo drone.
That'd be fucking genius.
Vimeo drone.
Vimeo box.
Get a TM on that.
But yeah, they would just, all the effects would be like CGI and just, they would just look like shit.
The premise involved nanotechnology.
Oh, that sounds shut the fuck up.
Absolutely stupid.
Nanodrome. Some of the effects were a little like, there was the one when...
The only thing I had a problem was that final effect where Barry Convex dies.
I thought that was great.
No,
oh, my
that.
God.
No, I thought...
Disintegrates.
I loved the gore, but it looked like a marionette.
I mean, his head didn't look quite real, but... I don't know.
Like someone heating up styrofoam.
He looked like Terry the puppet from Pee-wee's Playhouse.
He essentially has Rice Krispie treats bursting out of him.
What were you going to say?
When Harlan's hand turns into a grenade and you can't really tell.
You're right. We just looked at each other and were like, what the hell just happened?
The only effect I didn't like is there's a... where James Wood, he finds the slit in his stomach. And he puts the gun in his stomach, and he stands up, and there's a quick shot where his arm...
It's too thin.
It's like a stick figure arm, and it's like, oh, they probably should have put some more meat on that. That's the only effect I think doesn't work in the film.
Yeah, in that featurette, Forging the New Flesh, Rick Baker did say that. That was the one thing he was not pleased with, the way that looked.
Even Cronenberg, some of the stuff I read was saying that he would go back and change things because they were on a really tight budget with this.
Something about Canadian film law. You have to end when your contract says the filming ends.
Yeah.
You cannot go over.
And you have to have maple syrup on set at all times.
They put it on everything.
It's just weird.
Even
They're weird
ham.
In Canada. I don't know. But the effects, I mean, other than that, I thought... I don't know.
Wonderful.
They're just great. I mean, there's so many just... There's stuff that's like, even though I know how they did it, I watch it in this film, I'm just like, wow, I can't believe they pulled that off so well. Like the
two things with the television.
Right. The part where like the television bulges out and he's rubbing his face.
That's unbelievable.
It looks so real.
I was trying to figure it out. I was like, I have it right here. Projected onto.
I'm assuming it's like rear projected.
It is.
Yeah.
It's rear view. It's rear projection, and it's a. Hang on, I have it right here.
Is it a whoopee cushion?
Yeah, it's a whoopee
cushion. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense
there's,
too.
There's a graphic of a person sitting down on it, and it says poot. it's a rear projection plexiglass chamber that's inflated, and they said it was like an enormous dental dam.
Wow,
that's what it looks
so,
like.
Yeah, it is a balloon essentially with a rear projection inside with on plexiglass.
But it just looks perfect. It
looks awesome.
Yeah,
it doesn't look like a balloon. No. I don't think.
No, I mean, now that you say it, I could see it as a balloon. But at the
but
while
even,
you're watching,
even like
it,
knowing it's a balloon, it looks right. It just looks how it should look.
Yeah. The other thing was when the TV kind of comes alive and it has veins and it's bubbling on top. That was awesome.
Right.
And they what they did with that is they set up valves. They set it up to an air compressor, and then attached it to a synthesizer, and they played the synthesizer like an organ, and it would blow air
that's
through
great.
These valves.
And that
and
would,
it, that's yeah. why how it made like a natural looking flow.
I like James Woods in that scene because like you can't tell if he's snapping out it. Like he keeps trying to snap out of
right.
it, but then like is into it, and then he tries to snap out of it again. And
yeah, this film does a lot of great things with hallucination, where
well, the
you
whole
never
fucking
know.
Movie.
What is real and what isn't.
I mean, yeah, like the whole, like, I'd say last half hour of the film, it's just like, it's up in the air what's uh-huh. happening and what's not.
Because well, when he puts that thing on his head, he's like, you might have some hallucinations,
right.
just ride them out.
And yeah. he does a little bit and then he wakes up in his apartment.
Right. Yeah, but it's like, from that point on, the whole thing could be a hallucination.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You guys want to regroup and then we'll go through this. So we got to talk about some specific scenes
yeah.
here because there were some really cool things in this. Here at Cutprint Film, we do our very best to keep you in tune with the movie industry. We're revolutionizing the way you read movie reviews by putting them on the internet. Go to cutprintfilm.com and we will guarantee you a pleasant experience. We're breaking new ground every day to bring you the finest material possible. We've partnered with such clients as morelikeradio.com, antifanboy.com, and Joystick Jerks, the podcast. So check out all of that and more on cutprintfilm.com. And remember, have a Cutprint Film day.
You have such a lovely singing voice.
He's singing and playing the bass. A Renaissance man.
And turning this down at the same time.
Look at you.
I was hoping we were going to get to the part where she rapped.
No, please don't.
I think I hear it coming back in.
Rapping.
So, that was Blondie.
That was Blondie, who is in the film we're talking about, Videodrome.
And she's great.
She is very good in this. It's a. I can't imagine it was an easy character to play because she wasn't really an actress when she did this. Mm-hmm. So it's for her to play this kind of role was probably a. I was reading that like when they were rehearsing, Cronenberg had to explain because like she did a lot of like performance on stage at her
He's
shows.
Like, this isn't real. You're acting.
Yeah, you're not.
She was really freaked out.
Yeah, she was like, "Are you really going to kill me on TV?" And he said, "Yes." And that's how Blondie died. True story.
The epic of Blondie.
Yeah, she's playing a really. It's odd because the performance is subdued, and yet this character is so crazy. Like Jay said, she's burning herself with a cigarette.
Right.
She's. Having James Woods or Max Rand cut her, pierce her ear with a needle, and it's just bizarre.
There's actually on the commentary, because David Cronenberg is such a creep. There's a part where he was the reason what inspired that scene was one night he was about to go out to like dinner with his wife, and his wife said, "Oh, can you help me put these earrings in?" And when he went to put the earring through his ear, he said he got like dizzy because he's a creep. So I guess he got like aroused by putting the earring through her ear, and that blossomed into the scene in Videodrome.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah,
I felt like she was a product of this oversexed culture. She was kind of, it was kind of cool because she's like feminist, but at the same time, like super sexy, fucking burn her tit with a cigar.
I thought you were going to say a cigar.
It's just like, this is the future where everything's on the table.
Where everyone's burning their tits. Yeah,
it's kind of how it is now.
And even that scene where, you know, she's, you got any porno? That's like so upfront and blunt that,
he's like, it's just like rape, murder, torture stuff.
They're talking like this is normal.
Yeah. And then she's like, I'm going to go be a contestant on Videodrome after I've seen all this stuff.
Yeah, she's ready to jump all in.
Right. And then what did you guys think of that? I guess it's a twist sort of at the end where it turns out she's been dead the entire movie and he's never actually met her.
That
like that was that kind of that's the one part of the movie I didn't like.
I don't buy it, actually. Yeah. I think it's trying to make something that wasn't there.
Like basically the movie is saying that James Woods never met this character.
I feel like that's a symptom of the screenplay not being finished because like, they shot the beginning of the movie.
I think the reason that bothers me so much is because he has someone else in the film check in on this character because he's like his assistant or whatever calls the radio station to find out where she is and stuff like that. And his assistant's like, oh, she just went on vacation.
Yeah,
it's
she,
like,
wasn't,
well,
she wasn't on assignment like she had told him.
Yeah.
I just assume the whole ending is a hallucination and he's still in bed at home.
See, I don't want to assume that though because I feel like that would cheapen it. I think if
I'm with you.
I think if the whole ending is a hallucination, it's kind of like a cop out. And it's kind of like that Kevin Smith film cop out. No one wants to see.
That's right. There's not a laugh to be found.
Well, it would cheapen it if there was more film after it, but there's not. He shoots himself and theoretically wakes up from his hallucination or doesn't. And that's up to you.
But in my version, like, him killing himself is him going on to the next level. Basically, he's becoming the new flesh.
Yeah, that's what they tell us.
So, like, I honestly used to look at it as like the whole ending is really happening. Honestly, as crazy as it fucking is. I mean, the gun probably doesn't shoot cancer bullets. Like, that's probably in his head.
It's not. But it can't be happening.
I think Barry Convex, the way he died, was probably just a gunshot wound.
Yeah,
to the head.
He probably didn't.
I don't
really
believe he melted into the stage. Yeah,
he didn't turn into a puppet melting, but.
I don't see it because he walks into a old rundown boat and there just happens to be a TV there that can turn on. And
well, yeah, he's seeing that.
Yeah,
that's a hallucination.
So yeah,
let me
rephrase. I think parts of what's happening is him hallucinating, but I feel like the gist of it is still happening. That's the way I'll put it.
Okay,
like it's happening. He's just seeing certain things that aren't really happening at the same time.
And see. Discussions like this are why this film is so good.
Right, because there's no real answer, and it doesn't really, you know.
Nobody's having this type of discussion about the New Adventures of Pippi Longstocking.
Well, my wife might be. She loves that movie.
Yeah, it's similar to Enemy in that way, where, like, mm-hmm. there's weird aspects where
under the skin,
things just
it
don't
inspires
line up.
Conversation.
Yeah. Enemy also takes place in Canada, so there you go.
This is Toronto. Where did Enemy take place?
I think also Toronto.
Albuquerque? Hmm. New Mexico?
Yes, that's the same. Yeah. I think you're thinking
backwards.
Of Breaking Bad.
Okay, so...
Remember when James Woods threw the pizza on the roof?
Hey, Mr. White.
Now I kind of want to watch the whole episode of... whole season of Breaking Bad, but with James Woods.
Remember when Walt Jr. put the cigarette out on his back?
On his teat. Okay, so... This obviously inspired films like The Ring.
Right.
Yeah. Which Rick Baker also did effects for. FYI.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, he did.
Rick Baker does a lot of... He is fantastic.
Dave's actually absolutely stunned
Rick
Baker worked on another movie.
I got a hint of Fight Club in there.
The anti-establishment type thing.
And the ending, blowing your head out to get rid...
I could see that, yeah.
Beyond the Black Rainbow.
Oh, absolutely.
Obviously, it's just Videodrome 2. Unwatchable. That's the subtitle.
Oh, that poor movie.
And then The Fly, obviously. I was just going to say we're going to be doing The Fly next in the series. So you can kind of see the progression into the Fly.
Yeah, I would say like this movie is pretty much, this Videodrome is the movie that Cronenberg's previous movies were building to. Because all of his horror movies have this sort of body horror, and he loves the word flesh. In The Fly, they say flesh constantly. He just loves that word. I guess he's just like...
And Crash is all about mangled flesh.
Yeah, so it's just like... But this is the...
And fleshlights.
Yeah, there's a lot of fleshlights.
Again, I think you've watched a different movie.
And, like, Cronenberg's earlier movies, I like Rabbit, and I like... They're okay movies, but they're not as nuanced as this.
This is a masterpiece,
right? This is,
I will say.
It's almost like he was testing the waters for what he could do, and then he finally had like a revelation, like an epiphany of like, oh, this is what I've been working to.
Hey, folks, this feels like him switching on.
You're forgetting another contemporary masterpiece inspired by this film, the classic Nicolas Cage vehicle, 8mm.
Oh,
which investigates the snuff film world.
Yes.
And it's fucking horrendous.
Has Joaquin Phoenix as Max California. His name is Max. James Woods' name is Max. I don't know. Just saying. Just saying, folks. Just saying.
I forget who plays.
Just saying.
Machine.
Just saying. Chris Bauer. The actor's name is Chris Bauer, who plays Machine.
Who plays Machine?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
Just saying.
He's
just
wonderful.
Saying, everyone.
Chris just had a hemorrhage. We have an EMT.
And The Matrix, obviously. But
yeah.
That... You know,
you're just
The Matrix is a big one because, like, all the stuff that in The Matrix that when people saw it, they were like, that's so cool! Like, this
so
movie,
original.
This movie was just saying years before,
yeah. Literally.
And even like back to like the real life stuff, like, there's a part where James Wood, he puts this giant contraption on his head, and this movie takes place.
Virtual reality did not exist.
It's at least 5 to 7 years before virtual reality was even like a concept.
Yeah.
And basically,
which it was introduced to America in The Lawnmower Man.
Yeah, it was introduced by Job's War, Lawnmower Man 2.
Mr. Jeff Fahey.
But like this movie just pretty much like, we said this earlier, and I don't want to keep repeating it, but it's kind of like mind boggling how much Cronenberg was just able to predict with this movie.
He predicts there's like a Siri thing. The movie opens with Siri waking him up.
Yeah,
it's his fucking assistant.
And it calls itself the TV you go to bed with.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I go to bed with my phone.
Yeah.
So,
and that's what they're kind of like smartphones because everyone's addicted to them. They gotta get their, like, the Church of the Catholic.
I mean, yeah, everyone gets their own TV to watch just in at this church.
I loved it. It was called.
There's the bomb that has the TV.
The Church of the Cathode Ray.
Yes, yeah, it's like Catholic.
Right.
It's like,
yeah.
You knew that.
Good one.
I thought I was the smart one in the group.
Dave, when you put a point like that, end it with just saying, and it'll be solid.
The fact that you make Chris and I wear these pointed dunce caps doesn't make you the smart one. It's just your house.
It's my
house.
Get out if you don't like it.
Yeah, get out if you don't like my dunce cap.
All right. Well, I don't know. We haven't said enough about Videodrome, but is there more to say?
It's a hard movie to talk about. Like,
it is, because it's, especially if you haven't seen it.
It's a very visual.
Well, let me tell you, if you haven't seen it, I don't know what you're still doing.
Yeah,
listening.
You probably are really fucking confused.
Ruined.
But it's such a visual movie. I mean, it plays so much with the visual medium. I mean, the big thing with
it's not a, oh, sorry.
So you better be. The big thing with the program Videodrome in the movie, they're saying the reason Videodrome is so violent and is so weird is because it causes a reaction in, like, the human brain.
Yeah.
Just, like, it's the way the human brain processes violence.
That causes tumors to grow.
Right, and it just unleashes, you're able
it's
to...
It's a new part of the brain.
Yeah, it grows a new part of the brain, which is... That's such an odd thing to come up with.
Yeah.
Who would come up with that?
And, like, I think that plays into just describing the movie, because you can say a million things about this movie, but unless
that kind of explains the movie away.
Right.
But anything's possible because you're growing a new part of your brain.
And
so.
But even with all this weighty material, this is still a light film.
Oh, there's a part in this movie where... It almost took me out of the movie because it's so dated, where James Woods, he gets to work.
He's doing disco.
Yeah.
All the time.
He gets to work and he gets the polio vaccine. No. I couldn't even make it through that joke. He gets he gets to work, and his assistant gives him like a cigarette, which also you wouldn't have. But he walks down the hall and he pinches the ass of this girl, and the girl like smiles at him, like, "Oh, thanks, boss."
And this is 1983. Right. It's not like this is 1955.
Yeah, this isn't Mad Men, but yet. James, he literally just grabs this woman's ass in
like
a hallway.
It's a thing to do.
And she grins like, "Oh, thanks, James Woods, for grabbing my tookus."
Yeah. You guys don't do that at work?
Oh, I work with men.
Well, James Woods grabs my ass at work all the time, but that's but that's what I get for being his personal assistant.
But the film never takes itself too seriously. Like, I
no,
never
and
felt...
That's kind of endearing about it.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like this bullshit theory, like The Matrix tried to jam into your head in that
yeah,
second
no
or third
morals.
Film.
Yeah, there's no morals. Like,
it's like...
Oh,
it's...
I have a quote on that. Somebody questioned, like, none of these... Like, none of the giant aspects of the film feel backed up by something.
Right.
And Cronenberg said, "If you're a wishy-washy Canadian liberal, who's the enemy? I don't have a moral plan. I'm Canadian."
Right.
All right. That's a very Canadian response to that.
And, like, tying back into the way it takes... Even when stuff that is dark is happening, there's, like, this humor to it. Like, there's a part where James Woods is watching a Brian Oblivion video, and halfway through Brian Oblivion's speech, he gets strangled, and, like... That's dark, but it's, like, amusing, just the way it's filmed. It's just stuff like that.
And that Brian Oblivion character, that is a fantastic idea.
It's great. Like, he only appears on TV on TV.
Yes, it's a video cassette of himself played on television, and which
brilliant. Were they doing satellite broadcasts? Like,
Sort of. They were doing closed-circuit television at the time.
No. On top of all that, he's been dead for a while, so like none of this video is even relevant.
There's a library of tapes that he made.
They explained that before he died, he just recorded a bunch of tapes, and anytime someone wants him on their TV show, they just give them a tape.
Yeah,
and it's funny because like if you don't you don't realize that in the first scene, but if you go back and watch that scene, you realize that when the host of the show asks him a question, his answer has fucking nothing to do with her question. It's like insane, and like you sort of pick up on that, like, oh, this is just a weird eccentric guy. But
that's
once
what I've got.
But once you realize, like, oh, he's just dead and he's already recorded this video months ago, it makes perfect sense why he's not even answering her question.
This is a film you watch more than once.
I've seen this film at least like 15 times. Yeah. I catch something new every time I watch
it. That's kind of cool now that you say that, because I was thinking about how his response had nothing to do with her question.
Right.
I just thought it was to like make him seem like
aloof.
Aloof and like kind of like empty worded, you know? Yeah.
But it's like, no, he's not listening because he's dead.
This film also has a lot of themes involving sex and violence.
Right.
Where James Woods literally has intercourse with himself with a gun.
Right. And the gun eventually, it turns into, like, the gun on his hand. It's very phallic looking. It's very veiny.
Another amazing effect.
Yeah, fantastic.
This gun attaches itself.
There's, like, cables that come out and, like, dig into his wrists.
The gun attaches itself to his arm.
It looks almost Geiger-y.
Yeah, it's very Geiger-y.
Absolutely.
It's slimy.
Yeah.
A lot of
slime in this movie. a lot of ecto-cooler.
Slimers.
These tubes come out of the gun and attach into his forearm.
That's, like... I usually don't get like squeamish, but that scene in particular, where it's just like you see like the cords like digging into his wrist. Every time I watch it, I'm just like, ugh, it just makes me uncomfortable.
I wanted to touch on how they filmed the first weeks of shooting. Cronenberg had to shoot all of the stuff that was going to be on the TVs.
Oh yeah, because there's a lot of tube TVs
in
this film.
And he filmed that all on tape instead of film.
Like Samurai Dreams.
Yeah, he directed both Samurai Jeans.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean. I just can't stop picturing
Dionysus
samurai wearing jeans.
Whatever the Greek porn.
Oh, Dionysus and Apollo.
Yeah.
The artsy fartsy porno that Misha made.
Yeah.
And then all of the Oblivion stuff, they did that all on tape, and he said he hated doing it because it was just, they had to light everything bad intentionally, and he didn't like the way it was coming out until they played it in the movie, and they had to shoot every scene with two cameras if there was a...
Right, because I don't know if you've ever filmed a tube TV, but it becomes a flickering mess.
Yeah, it looks like you're filming a foggy evening, not
so
a TV.
You would have to line up your lines perfectly with what they were saying.
What a hassle that must have been.
And then they had to go in
and cut that part of the film out and put it over the TV, like in post, because
that sounds like a fucking nightmare.
Yes, it does. And this is all practical,
yeah,
post production work. There's no software for this.
And to think, like, now you can just do that instantly.
On your phone.
Yeah.
You can do this on your phone.
Yeah, there's an app for that, I think. The Videodrome app.
It's just insane how much work they went through. And, like, do you think that gives the film more value than...
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Certainly. Like, my biggest pet peeve about modern, especially horror films, is when they rely so heavily on just CGI, because it cheapens it. Because there's no weight to it. There's no, like...
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like there's effort. And I know it takes effort to create CGI. There's artists, and they have to put it all together. But there's just something more tangible about... I think that's what it is. Like a prop. Like, John Carpenter's The Thing is a perfect example of this. Because that movie is filled with millions of practical effects. And then they remade it recently. They called it a prequel, but it's basically a remake.
And the remake's not a bad movie.
But all of the, like, the monster effects, they're all CGI, and none of them have, like, the same effect.
It's like you said, it's weightless.
Right.
Because you know there's really nothing there. Because
it's like, when you watch a practical effect, when you watch Videodrome and you see, like, a hand with a gun that comes out of a TV screen, and you see a TV that's blowing guts out everywhere, and you see, like, a videotape that someone's holding in their hand and it's pulsing like it's alive, and it's all done practically, your mind registers it as real. You register it as like, oh, this is physically happening. When you see that done with CGI, you're like, oh, that's obviously not real because it looks like a fucking cartoon.
Yeah, maybe it's the, you have that thought for a second, how did they do that? And with now in the computer age, that thought, you skip right over.
You know how they did
that. It's sort of the same thing of like the Uncanny Valley principle, where like if you're watching something and there's like a completely CGI character, you're always going to pick up on that it's not real, because just something about it in your mind doesn't process it the same way.
If something's slightly off, then it bothers you more than if it were completely off.
Right.
That's the premise of the Uncanny Valley, right?
Yeah. And it ties in perfectly with Videodrome, so there you go.
There was something I wanted to say about that. I forget.
Oh, you were thinking of Hidden Valley Ranch.
Yeah.
Do you have any bacon bits?
I'm just going to dip this raw broccoli right in that and bite into it like it's an ice cream.
Perhaps the alcohol is inhibiting my memory. Okay. We're going to move on to movie picks. If you're all comfortable with that, press your buzzers right now.
All right. Oh, I left my buzzer in that car.
Hey, everybody, we're back.
We had a witch fly in to record that song, I believe.
That was Snow White's evil stepmother.
It didn't seem that long when I recorded it. But
oh, that's a full 20 seconds long, Dave.
That voice sounds like every voice in the film Labyrinth. Just all the Muppets are just like, hoggle.
Oh, man. Who's going first this week?
I don't know. Who is going first?
I'll go first.
Okay.
My pick is 2005's Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. This is a film written and directed by Shane Black. Shane Black, he's primarily known as a screenwriter. He wrote the first Lethal Weapon. He's really good at writing trashy action films, basically, and he gets paid a lot of money for it. He sold his script for The Last Boy Scout for like $10 million, some insane amount of money. So Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, it stars Robert Downey Jr. right before his comeback. This is right before Iron Man, when basically people weren't employing him because he was like a
disaster.
He was like an insurance risk, basically, because he had such a bad drug.
This is not The Long Kiss Goodnight.
No.
No.
But The Long Kiss Goodnight was also written by Shane Black.
As hard as I might try to convince you that this is The Long Kiss Goodnight on the internet, it is not.
Right. So, Robert Downey Jr., he's like a thief, and he's robbing a store on around Christmas time, and the alarm goes off, so he runs to get away from the cops, and he stumbles into an audition. And the film that's being auditioned just happens to be about a robber. So he's frantic about being almost caught by the police, and they think he's auditioning. So they're like, this guy's great. So they fly him out to Hollywood to become like a movie star. And while he's out there, he gets involved with a private detective who's named Gay Perry, played by Val Kilmer, who is fantastic in this movie.
Yeah.
It's hard to remember that Val Kilmer...
before he was carving up?
Yeah, this is Val Kilmer at his most svelte, I guess you could say.
Well, he's bulking still. He's it's a long bulk.
It's before the cut. But,
He's in Palo Alto.
Is he?
For
is he a sea monster in that
Yes.
film?
He's horrible looking.
Well, in this film, he looks fine, and, he's like a gay private detective, and he's very, like, GQ. He dresses really well. And so... Robert Downey Jr. and Val Kilmer, they get involved in a real mystery while trying to research a mystery for the movie that Robert Downey Jr. is making. And it's all very meta, but it's not like in-your-face 21 Jump Street meta where it's just like, we get it, this is meta, enough. It's just, and it's just, it's a funny, dark, it's a really unique movie. It's not like a lot of, and it's just...
I thought he was like a pulp author in that.
No, there's a subplot about a pulp author in that. There's a lot of subplots in the film. There's a subplot about a pulp author.
Seen it in a while. It's a Christmas movie, too.
It is,
because
a lot of Shane Black's films, they take place during Christmas. The Long Kiss Goodnight takes place during Christmas. Lethal Weapon takes place during Christmas.
Iron Man 3 takes place.
Yeah, Iron Man 3 does take place during Christmas.
The Christmas Carol.
What year did that come out?
2005.
All right.
And it's just a good.
It's a cool movie.
It's like a snappy movie. Like, they don't make movies like this a lot. Like, the dialogue is just, like, constantly sharp and fresh. And it's just, I don't know, it's a unique film.
Robert Downey Jr. is good at that.
He is.
It's the Tony Stark thing, the snappy dialogue.
Like, I almost wish this came out longer before Iron Man, because I feel like this would have been the movie that brought him back into the mainstream.
Well, it kind of did.
Sort of,
like,
but
this is kind of what gave Favreau the fate.
But like, no one remembers this movie; they just remember Iron Man, and that's pretty much all Robert Downey Jr. does now. Like, I'd rather he was doing more movies like this than fucking Iron Man.
Then you're in luck. The Judge premiered at the Toronto International Film Festival.
Yeah, and I hear it was not good.
Oh, come on, looks great.
The most satisfying feeling you can get in the gym is the pump.
Perfect.
Oh my God. You gonna pump me up?
This is cut pump
film. I'm gonna go.
Oh. I thought it was my turn.
Nope, my turn. I went last time. I don't really remember what order we went in. My pick is 2006 film. It's called Candy. It's starring Heath Ledger and Abbie Cornish.
I've heard of this. I haven't seen it. It's Australian. It
takes place in Australia.
Ah, yeah. So there's a lot of dingoes and
lots of dingoes.
Everyone's got
babies.
A boomerang.
Everybody's drinking Foster's.
They're all eating Bloomin' Onions.
That's right. Nothing but Outback Steakhouses down there.
It's weird. That's all that's out there.
Even
and
the Aboriginals. The Aboriginals are eating Outback Steaks.
What's the movie called again?
Oh, I forgot.
Candy.
It's called Outback Candy.
Candy. This movie's called Candy. It stars Heath Ledger and Paul Hogan. I'm sorry. That's wrong.
It stars the Croc Hunter and a croc.
It stars Heath Ledger and Abbie Cornish. And the synopsis goes like this.
Shen.
Yeah, Abbie Cornish Hen. She's
delicious. Pecking
her way through the film. Kicking up grits and all sorts
again.
Of things.
Never gets old.
A poet falls in love with an art student, that's Abbie Cornish, who gravitates to his bohemian lifestyle and his love of heroin. Hooked as much on one another as they are on the drug, yuck, that's a terrible piece of synopsis there. Their relationship alternates between states of oblivion, self-destruction, and despair. This is a fantastic movie. Not many people talk about this one. I'm not sure why.
It didn't get a big release.
No, it did not.
Yeah. So, I've never even heard of this.
I've heard of it. I've just never seen it.
And it's kind
of
weirding me out.
I watched this when it came out on DVD in 2006. And it's really good. It's the first Heath Ledger performance I watched that I was like, wow, this guy's something else. And then, of course.
Yeah, why doesn't he do anything anymore?
I don't know.
Oh.
Hello, kitty!
Oh, it's the Crypt Keeper.
Oh, the Crypt Keeper's here.
He's keeping Heath Ledger.
Okay.
This is really good. It was directed by Neil Armfield, not Neil Armstrong.
I was so close to saying it.
This guy's an actual field of arms.
Not just a strong arm, but
and,
a field of them.
It's based on a novel written by Luke Davies, which I haven't read.
Right. Why would you?
Exactly.
It's probably for teenagers.
This is a movie podcast. We don't read books.
Yeah.
We're illiterate.
Books.
So yeah, watch this movie for the performances alone, even though the story's really good and heart-wrenching.
Is Sam Neill in this? I feel like he should be, because he's in every movie about Australia.
Jeffrey Wright.
Oh, he's the other Australian guy. Does he show his dick at some point? Because Jeffrey Wright loves to do that.
Jeffrey Rush, I'm sure. Sorry, not Jeffrey Wright. Jeffrey Wright's from Boardwalk Empire. Yes.
And I knew who you were talking about.
He's English. Okay. Jeffrey Rush is English.
No, Jeffrey Wright.
Oh, I don't know about that one.
Huh, who's on first?
I don't know.
But yeah.
Is Sam Neill in this?
Negative. Sam Neill's not in this.
But Heath Ledger is he's one of those actors that it's like, ugh. I wish he weren't dead.
Yeah, he had a lot more in him.
Because you can, I know everyone's like thinks like, oh, the Joker thing's been overblown, but no,
it's a great.
He's so good in that. And then you watch like Brokeback Mountain, which he's fucking phenomenal in that film.
I've still yet to see that movie.
Oh, it's that movie is heartbreaking.
I've never heard anybody say a bad thing.
The other
about
one
it?
That came out right around then, he was really good in. Parnassus.
Coroner's Report.
No, fuck. I wish I could think of it. I was always a Heath Ledger fan.
Not until this movie was I a Heath Ledger.
He's a good
fan.
Actor.
Calm down there, Mr. Pitchfork. I like Heath Ledger before all the cool kids.
That's right.
The most satisfying feeling you can get in the gym is the pump.
Dave. Hello. Welcome to the Cut Print Film Podcast, episode 28.
That's so subdued.
It's not much of a stinger. It's more
Well, you got to do it twice.
The most satisfying feeling you can get in the gym is the pump.
I think it's that music. Arnold Schwarzenegger was playing that music while talking, I believe, on a xylophone.
On his Moog.
What else do you do in the gym besides the pump?
Well, you do calf raises.
Check out girls' butts.
Yeah, that's right.
Whenever I go to the gym, people just sit on the machines and look at their fucking phones.
That's true.
You got Billy Joel there for me?
No, I don't.
Right.
Nope. That's
what are we referencing? What's happening?
All right. Anyway.
Is your film about Billy Joel?
No.
Oh.
My film is the 2011 mini documentary.
Of course.
American Juggalo.
Oh, I wanted to see this.
This is a film you can watch on Vimeo. It was filmed by documentary filmmaker Sean Dunn. It is a look at the often mocked, misunderstood subculture of juggalos.
Okay.
Hardcore insane.
Let's relax there, synopsis.
Hardcore insane clown posse fans who meet once a year for 4 days straight at the gathering of the juggalos.
I'm sure they meet other days too. At like the fucking.
No, they all meet here.
They meet at the church's chicken parking lot, I believe.
The Bojangles.
Watching this, I think it's like 28 minutes, maybe.
That's too much time to spend with juggalos.
It is a fascinating 28 minutes, but it is also an exercise in trying to keep your jaw from hitting the floor, because there are scenes in this film that just blow you. Like, it's insane. They don't actually blow you. They blow you away. I should have finished that sentence.
All right, you'll learn. Eventually you'll learn.
There's a scene.
That technology is years away.
You know how they all paint their faces?
Yeah.
Well, there's a scene where kids are spray painting their faces.
Oh my god.
Spray paint. Yeah.
Are they stenciling it like Banksy?
Yes.
Do they immediately die from the fumes? Because then I'll watch this movie.
You could tell they might be dead now, because this was 2011. They're not making it very far. There are pregnant women just doing drugs and drinking.
Good,
good for them.
And then people wonder why they're mocked, these juggalos.
Well, I think it's because they're
garbage.
Their faces are painted. And these are adults.
I think they're human garbage is the answer.
I mean, as much as it is, as much fun as that as it is to make fun of them, it's also fascinating to watch them. And
I don't even
like,
think it's fun to make fun of them. I just get miserable just hearing about juggalos. I just see them and I'm just like,
yeah.
I see them all the time. They're really on my lawn.
I was gonna say, you don't see too many around these parts.
No, we've lucked out.
There's a lot more to do over on the East Coast than there is in the flyover states.
Yeah, in Juggalo City.
No offense to anybody living in a flyover state.
Yeah.
It's but all about
the
fans.
Get the fuck out of there.
There's no. You don't have to watch any insane clown posse, like on stage. You don't even see any of that.
How about Faygo? Is Faygo in the film?
I love some cheap soda.
There's a lot of Faygo. There's a lot of other stuff that they do, which I can't remember because it's been a little while.
Does anyone get sent to the killing fields after the 11th Joker card drops?
No, but they ask, "What is a juggalo?"
Oh.
I don't know.
At what point does the Great Malenko show up?
I was just
going
to ask about the Great Malenko. Yeah.
Is the Great Malenko in the film?
D. Malenko is
the professional wrestler. It's Chris Benoit in the film. I haven't seen him wrestle that often lately.
Him and Heath Ledger, you don't see them around anymore.
All right, well, we've insulted everybody.
Yeah, we've mocked death constantly.
Then you might as well cue it up, because...
That's all you got?
We're not going to get any classier.
I love it.
Well...
It's that time again, folks. Time to put all my clothes back on.
Time to start the podcast over.
Time to put on a turtleneck and start shaving.
Take two. It's a good practice run, guys.
Good work, everyone. We're going to do it again. Take it from the top.
Take a couple of these pep pills and we'll do it again.
What do we got coming up next week?
Next week we have David Cronenberg's The Fly.
Yes.
What happens in that film?
Jeff Goldblum goes to an island and there are dinosaurs.
Interesting. I don't remember that. I've seen this movie before, too.
I watched the director's cut.
Oh, all right.
It's The Fly and Jurassic Park edited together badly. It's like a 7-hour movie.
They spared no expense.
Have you ever seen The Fly 2?
I have.
No.
It's not good.
I just always remember seeing that at Choices and being like, no.
How about the original Fly?
No, I'm going to watch the 1958 one.
It's a wonderful film.
All right, so watch that, too.
The ending is upsetting.
Yes, it is. Enjoy. All right,
let's get our plugs in.
Well, first of all, you should go to our site.
Yahoo.com.
/juggalo.
Guitarist.
Yeah,
We're doing that joke again.
Slash is Snake Pit. The pinball game he put out.
Hey, seriously, cutprintfilm.com. That's our website.
Please go there.
All these movie reviews.
It's a lot less silly there.
Also, antifanboy.com.
It's a lot more silly there.
Yes, they do silly things like clamming and shucking corn.
They're always in the bay clamming. I don't know what that's about.
Me neither. We started it last week and we just can't stop.
They get great reception in that bay, though.
Also,
one of our listeners and my friend Lou started a podcast about 90s movies.
That's a great idea.
Called Dumb Dial-Up Movies.
Perfect.
It's a cool little podcast. Similar to ours, so if you like it, check it out.
Subscribing as we speak.
One of the films they did recently was True Lies, some Three Ninjas movie. Nice. I don't know. They're just doing all kinds of goofy.
Hopefully, one with Hulk Hogan.
Yeah. All right, isn't he in all of them?
No, he's in the third one.
I think it's called like
Something Mountain.
Hulk Hogan Mountain, I believe it's called.
Also, Joystick Jerks. They are a podcast about video games.
That's what I hear.
Which you would assume
they
that.
Are on the Toxic Network.
Yes,
Toxic.
Are they actual jerks? Is that why the show is called?
Yes, they're very unlikely.
Are they really rude?
They're cool but rude.
Guys,
like Raphael the Turtle.
Loja's tapping his watch.
Oh, I'm sorry, Robert Loja.
Yeah, we gotta go. Man. For those of you who don't get that joke, he's our janitor.
Yeah. One day when Robert Loja dies, it's gonna be really awkward when we make that joke because we're not gonna realize it. Good night.
See you next week.
I love you.